This is KHOI, Story City, Ames, and surrounding areas.
Welcome to Local Talk Tuesday, where we explore the people, places, stories, and events of our Central Iowa community. Thank you for tuning in with us today. I am Mike Metz, your host for the hour, along with Pat Schlerbaum and KHOI's Mike Murphy. KHOI Radio, along with the Ames Writers Collective, is spotlighting Beth M. Howard, known as the Pie Lady. Beth will be presenting her book, World Peace, A Baker's Global Quest for Peace, Love, and Understanding. She'll be here at 622 Douglas in our KHOI studios this Friday, December 9th at 7 p.m. Her books will be available and pie will be served. So for more information, go to the AmesWriterCollective.org. And Beth will also be joining Donna and Lana today on Donna Lana's Kitchen at noon, right here at KHOI.
And Mike, there's just hard to get too much pie if you're going to have the Pie Lady. Hey, today skies will be cloudy, winds will be light and variable, and we will expect a high of 38. It will remain cloudy through the evening hours with light winds out of the northeast and a low of 21. Our gibbous moon is at 97% illumination, and it will become full Wednesday evening at 10:09 p.m. Sunrise this morning is at 7:26 a.m., and the sun will set at 4:44. Our current temperature is 25 degrees.
Thanks, Pat. Dr. Molly Lee is joining us from the Story County Board of Health. She's joining us for our monthly visit. Good morning, Dr. Lee.
Good morning, Mike.
Well, it's that time of year when folks are beginning to huddle more indoors. And of course, that means the potential to share our respiratory infection. So I suppose we ought to begin with updates on the COVID-19 and some of those other nasties. What have you had for us?
Yeah. So we talked, I think, on a previous month about the triple-demic, as it's been called, with COVID, influenza, and RSV being our three major respiratory viruses of concern this year. So we're still keeping an eye on those. As I've mentioned in previous months, right now the COVID case data that we have reported is not very valuable because our true cases are likely almost certainly greater than those reported cases because of at-home testing. Mm-hmm. So we're really kind of keeping an eye on how the winter is going. You know, we're maybe starting to see a bit of an increase from our Thanksgiving holiday already. And, you know, the first winter we had of COVID, we had a rough time because we didn't have widely available vaccines. The second winter, we had that Omicron variant that really had the very quick infectious rate. And so we're just kind of waiting to see what this winter will be like. And I think maybe our greatest concern is the fact that we have influenza and RSV making a hit as well.
Yeah, that's not good for folks that are, especially those who are immunocompromised, I would think, or perhaps those other populations that are a little more susceptible, like the very young and, of course, the elderly. One thing I still, and I'm sure you will emphasize this, is that we just continue those good sanitary practices of washing hands and wearing a mask when you're in groups, especially indoors.
Yep, you're absolutely right. Those things will be effective against all respiratory viruses, whether they're severe or not. You know, that is going to be protective against the common cold as well. So anything you can do to keep yourself healthy, and you're absolutely right with the immunocompromised folks, including the elderly people in particular. The Iowa Department of Health and Human Services, previously IDPH, reported the first influenza-related death last week, I believe, of the influenza season this year. And so it was two individuals, both elderly, with underlying conditions. So those individuals really, it's important to take protection if you are one of those individuals, and do what you can for staying home. If you're sick, or if you might be exposed to people who are sick, wear a mask when you can, wash your hands, because really the likelihood of that becoming much more severe is a greater risk in those individuals.
Yeah.
And of course, getting your vaccine. You know, we still have those bivalent boosters available for COVID. We have our influenza vaccine. Unfortunately, there isn't a vaccine for RSV, but those other protective measures can still help with that.
Sure. It's got to be a little bit concerning when you've got, especially the family gatherings where you've got generations together and you've got the youth that perhaps they're carrying the RSV and the elderly that some of them are now seem susceptible, more susceptible than a couple of years ago even. And, you know, it's just, it's part of gathering, so you just have to take your precautions.
Yeah, it's challenging, but it is manageable. You know, we have these measures we can take. We have for COVID, the at-home testing that, you know, if you can reduce your exposure sometime, period of time before your gathering, test to make sure everyone that's gathering is negative, and keep up those practices like hand washing, you know, you can be confident that your gathering is safer than if you wouldn't have taken those measures.
Yeah. And I've had a experience. I didn't, fortunately, and I'm knocking on formica here this morning, but I have been able to dodge those. But I have known a couple of folks that indeed came down with COVID over the holiday. And I just reminded them, it's a good thing that you had been vaccinated because your situation could be a lot worse than just having to spend some time laying around home for a couple of days.
Exactly. And I've known some people too who lasted, you know, almost 3 whole years and just still have come down even with all the vaccines that are available. I had some international travel a couple months ago, and that was what did it for me too. I maintained my negativity until just a couple months ago, and I was very thankful I was vaccinated because it knocked me out pretty hard for about a week. So,
Yeah, and that's, you can take all the precautions, but if other folks don't cooperate, and of course the virus knows cooperation is not a word with virus, they just do what they do. You just try to take the best measures we can.
Exactly. And, you know, the goal anymore isn't zero COVID. We're well aware this virus is going to happen in our community, and we likely will be exposed to it at some point, but just setting our bodies up for the best success we can is just going to keep ourselves and our friends and family the healthiest we can.
Mm-hmm. Just a quick question on the influenza. Since the travel for quite a while there was less, that I would assume played into the fact that we didn't see as many cases during the pandemic and the closures. But now that more traveling is occurring, I would assume we're going to, the Board of Health have their eye on this virus and are watching to see what happens. Is that correct?
Definitely. Yeah, you're right with the holidays. There are a couple things that always contribute to those peaks in respiratory viruses over from year to year, and one of those is travel and just the different strains and exposure of different people to different places and whatever virus strains might be dominant in that region. One good news is we do have a pretty close match with our influenza vaccine this year to the influenza virus that's circulating, so another plug for that vaccine there. But indoors and close gatherings are definite risk factors. Mm-hmm. So we're likely to see an increase, and we'll be keeping a close eye on that.
Okay. Well, we want our listeners to know that you folks just don't deal with these entities all the time. You have a plenty on your plate. The Board of Health for Story County has a number of different areas, and one of those is environmental health. What can you tell us about that department?
Yeah, so the Story County Environmental Health Department that the Board of Health oversees is, they're very hard workers. They're doing all kinds of stuff too. And, you know, I know we always talk about infectious diseases here, but some of the things that our environmental health folks do are really important to our health as well. So they deal a lot with water, soil, things like wells, septic systems, pools. And so, you know, some of these things are really important. One thing that maybe folks might not be aware of or could use a reminder of is that the Story County Environmental Health Department offers free wellhead inspection and water testing for private water supply wells within the county. So if you're in a rural area and you have a well, you can have the environmental health folks come out and inspect your wellhead for any faults that might compromise water quality and take a sample from the pressure tank untreated water and send it into a lab to test for coliform and nitrate level. So things that very directly could impact your health through your drinking water. And then the Environmental Health Department also investigates complaints related to groundwater, surface water, waste. They do a lot of education and troubleshooting around wells and septic systems with homeowners, are involved with inspection and permitting of those septic systems, pools, you know, a lot of these things that where water or soil are in interface with humans and could affect their health, our Environmental Health Department is involved with those.
Sure. And because Iowa has such a large number of animals, either on the land or in confinement, I suppose there's some perhaps direct but more indirect consequences that we need to be keeping an eye on, especially for things like coliforms and nitrates.
Yep. And there's state and local codes that help enforce these different protective measures that keep us safe. And so that's something that our Environmental Health Department does as well, as ensure compliance with state and local codes. And then related to the animal thing that you mentioned, the department does maintain records and maps of manure management plans that are in existence, and then assists in review of applications for new CAFOs as well.
Now, is that the department that the county sanitarian is associated with?
Yeah, yep. Our environmental health director, Kimberly Grandinetti, is a registered sanitarian, and so her and her team of folks are out in the field working on all these things.
Okay. And she's fairly recent, I think, within the last maybe a year and a half or 2 years. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
Fairly new to the area, but I had an opportunity to bump into her at one meeting and at least get to know her a little bit. So, yeah, that's great.
Yeah. Yep. She is relatively new. Margaret Janes was with our department in that role for many years and retired recently, but we were able to hire Kimberly, and she has experience from other counties, so and in Illinois as well. So we're happy to have her and to be able to keep these services running.
Past life, when I was a microbiologist, that was an area that I thought about at one time too, but I went a little bit different path. So anyway, enough about me. Let's delve into one area that's really serious this time of year, Molly. And that's, we have some homeless folks that we see a few around the city of Ames and areas in the community. And I think about shelters and food and that kind of thing. Does the County Board of Health deal with that challenge as well? How do you go about managing or looking into those issues?
Yeah, so that's a really important point, you know, especially as the weather gets cold, where those of us who have homes are, you know, it's a privilege to be able to get out of the elements, to stay warm, to have food. And unfortunately, that's not something that everyone has. And so the Board of Health and our county doesn't directly have a department or a program that we and the Board of Health manage, but we have good relationships with a lot of folks that are doing really good work in those areas. And so, you know, we do have homeless populations in Story County and in Ames and across central Iowa. Actually, you know, we have in kind of the central Iowa region, in the kind of 5-county area, there's estimated to be over 2,000 homeless individuals on any given night. So definitely something that happens here. A couple resources that are available is the United Way of Story County has brought together a hunger collaboration. And so it's a way to kind of organize all of the different food pantries that are out there. And so if anyone is in need of assistance, you can reach out to the United Way, and they have all of those different food pantries and what they offer. There's a variety in Ames at several of the different churches. There's Food at First right downtown, the Bethesda Community Food Pantry, Harvest Vineyard Church, several around the area. There's also different programs like a backpack program where bags of food for the weekend are available for elementary students, mm-hmm. Meals on Wheels. So lots of different resources that are out there. And depending on your need, you know, maybe your special population, if it's students or elderly folks, people who need transportation, there are different options available.
Okay. Well, on that note, Molly, we're going to close for this month and appreciate you joining us for your monthly visit with the Story County Board of Health, and wish you the best, and we'll be visiting again with you next month.
Okay. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you. That was Dr. Molly Lee with the Story County Board of Health. Pat, you know, I just had a time when I could visit here with Steve Lekwa, former director of the Story County Board of Conservation.
Oh, what a voice for the environmental world. Years as the director here of the Story County Conservation Board, and longtime contributor to the Ames Tribune. And it's so nice that you're able to bring his words to life.
Yeah.
You know?
So let's.
And we can hear the guy.
Yeah, let's listen to Naturally Speaking.
I am Mike Metz. I want to thank you for tuning in to this segment of Naturally Speaking with Steve Lekwa.
This weekend, with that front moving through, you've got these northern birds. This is when they're moving.
Mm-hmm.
Driving past Ada Hayden. There's a good selection of birds.
It's been pretty open. The only thing that I've heard that kind of exciting, my doctor, he told me there had been evening grosbeaks at a feeder south of him, which he's a mile south of me, down 11th Street here, and then skip over the country club down there, and on the next road south, there's a couple of feeder stations mm-hmm. there that we usually check. There were scattered reports on the bird hotline of evening grosbeaks around Iowa. It's been many years since I've seen one here in Iowa. Oh gosh, I think I was still home at Story City when the last time we had quite a flock for a few days one winter.
You talk about, we start seeing the red-breasted nuthatches, we get right. reports.
And they've been erratic. They were here fairly early, mm-hmm. here, gone, then back for a couple of days, and then gone.
And then when we had the snowstorm, brought the horned larks and hundreds the long spurs and reports of snow buntings.
Haven't seen them yet. But yeah. Lots and lots of horned larks out toward the co-op.
You'd see those birds along the roads where the seeds mm-hmm. would settle and be picking grit and seed. And then you'd get these all little snow squalls, and then you'd get a clear sun patch, and you'd hear high-flying geese. You knew they were migrants because they
exactly
were way
right.
up there.
Yep. Yeah. When Canada geese are high, it's almost like in mallards too. Local feeders, their wing beats are faster, their formations are less steady. But when they're cruising, they're holding formation, and they slow down to economy cruise. And it's just a steadier, slower, more methodical. It's interesting how springtime, you potentially see lots and lots of speckle bellies and lots of snow geese move through here. Fall, don't see many, almost never see specks in the fall.
Yeah.
And only very occasionally flights of snow geese. About a week ago, it was when it was snowing. We looked under that spruce tree right there, and there sat a fox. And there's kind of a sheltered spot there. And it was just kind of relaxed, scratching, and was there for several minutes. Sue took a picture of it. The neighbor over here decided to walk their dog, and that dog being nearby spooked the fox, and it ran and headed kind of diagonally out ahead of the dog and down into the ravine. But we hadn't seen a fox here for quite a while. We used to see them pretty regularly before all that development north of us.
Yeah, you're close enough to the ravine. I would think they'd come up once in a while.
Oh, I'm sure, and at night they do.
Oh, yeah.
The deer certainly did. The bumper crop of acorns this year, you could actually hear them crunching with the closed windows. They were munching acorns right out below the windows here. Just crunch, 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 picking up. And I was surprised because, you know, there's a lot of corn in the area and things, but boy, they wanted those even red oak acorns.
that's what they would be eating if we didn't have the corn. So that's probably their first go-to.
And acorns, even with that high tannin that the reds have, they're high in fat, higher than corn. And they also have the starch and proteins. So they're from a nutrition standpoint, it's a bigger bang for the buck than corn if they can choke down the taste.
Maybe they don't have that problem with the taste.
But never bothered birds, turkeys, right. Wood ducks, yeah. Red-headed woodpeckers, blue jays, they grab them and run. But even the squirrels here have been picking up those acorns and eating them. They so haven't shifted completely to a browse diet yet, as long as they can get at waste grain and as long as there's still some
green
acorns.
And some green grass here and there. They're still nibbling on the grasses. One thing folks don't realize is when they convert over to become browsers, their microbiology and their system changes to adapt to that.
That really wasn't even understood when Aldo Leopold was doing his work out in the Kaibab, when they tried to bring hay in to feed the mule deer and they died anyway. They couldn't digest it.
There's some local geese going right over to your home right now, probably heading back to get to some water to drink.
They're either going to the 19th Street Pond or they're coming off McCoe's Pond, the other side of Indian Creek over here, going out to feed.
When you think about it, places like this are just ideal for that type of a critter that they can settle in. They've got food, water, shelter.
And they don't have to go
too far.
A quarter mile. Just lift off the urban ponds and drop into the next cornfield, and there they are. I was surprised yesterday morning to see skim ice even on some of the deeper ones because it had been calm. I'm sure places like Hendrickson Marsh are skimmed over. There are probably some open pockets that a few birds have kept open, but they get pushed off that so regularly. If any of them hang in there, somebody spots it and goes after them.
Wes Peterson is a good example of what you're talking about. As you're coming in, there's a few spots that are somewhat sheltered in that, and then you get the bigger water, so you're not going to see the ice so much on the bigger water except right along the edge this time of year.
Sue and I walked it Sunday afternoon a week and a half ago of the loop out around both West Peterson. It's so low right now that the south end is really quite shallow, probably no more than 2 or 3 feet at most out there, probably not even that. And even then, when it was hadn't been cold as long, there was patchy ice over that area. There was still a guy out fishing in a kayak just across from the beach. No shorebirds, nothing involved with the water, but lots of, and I would say lots of harris sparrows. I've never seen so many. They were there. Where else did I see? Oh, I was over at Boy Scout camp pruning trees that we've planted over the years. Those brushy edges along the edge of the timber line, just crawling with sparrows, and a lot of them were harris sparrows. Yeah. Just to get them here, we'd have some white-throated sparrows and even some white-crowned sparrows, foxes. We'd get a nice smattering of different sparrows move through here before all the development. Now, I hardly see them at all.
The weedy grasses and those things that you just don't have that habitat.
I used to throw some millet cheap bird seed out on the deck, and I've got pictures of beautiful male harris right just 6 feet out from the window there.
Well, those hopefully will hang around, start of December. There's a what's called a window where we start doing our Christmas bird count period, or some folks refer to it as a winter count. Do you remember how that first got started, Steve?
And we're well beyond a century now of those counts. It was a relatively small group of people. Wish I could remember names, I don't. Cornell University, it was kind of a hub even then out in New York. There was just a smattering of people here and there that thought, wouldn't it be fun? You know, there were all sorts of other holiday period traditions that some of them were here too. I mean, like the great rabbit hunt that would go on, and businessmen and farmers and everybody would have a contest to see who could get the most rabbits. They thought they would do a bird thing kind of on that same way. And a few more the next year, and till now we have those count circles by the hundreds all over from Alaska to Mexico and coast to coast.
Group of individuals, some of them were hunters, and they decided, let's see what we can count instead of take. And you mentioned count circle. And a count circle is...
about a 7 mile radius.
15 mile diameter, 7.5 mile right. radius.
Because...
and there's a specific point. For example, here in Ames, it's near the 30-35 intersection, I believe.
Because our area where we're sitting right now, and I call it southeast Nevada,
yes,
we're right near the eastern edge of the Ames Count Circle.
Within the Count Circle, there are pieces sectioned off, and then folks are assigned or can join a group. You count the, what, the species and the numbers.
Exactly. And we have a checklist that we use that has the ones that you'd expect to see, even some of the less common ones,
mm-hmm.
like crossbills and things that you might only see once in 10 years. They wouldn't have evening grosbeaks on there, so I would just love to be able to throw one of those in this year.
Yeah. Now, with a bird like a grosbeak, for example, because it's not a common bird, I would assume there's some kind of documentation that you'd have to...
with everybody carrying, almost everybody carrying smartphones with high-class cameras built right in that are better than the digital camera that I have.
Mm-hmm.
I don't carry a smartphone myself. I'm not smart enough to run it. But hopefully Dean Check and Hank Zolotel, that's our coordinator for the Nevada section of the count.
Mm-hmm.
Hank's used his camera to document some sightings. In fact, several years ago, we had an interesting one where we thought it was a hawk perched sitting on top of a power pole out there toward the west edge of town by the tile.
One of the prairie falcons? Or?
Well, I can't remember what we thought it was, but it was later on when we had broke for mid-morning. And Hank and I had divided. I'd taken one group to do feeders and the cemetery and stuff, and he had gone out on his usual route to the north and west, like where he kind of encounters you guys. At any rate, he took this picture of this raptor up on there. We got to looking. Who was it noticed it? Maybe it was Tom Rosberg. I said, that thing's got dark eyes. It's not what we think it is. It was a merlin. And
so you weren't sure... perhaps it might have been a kestrel. Or...
yeah, those are lighter colored
yep.
in all their male or female. What else would we have thought it was? We didn't...
yeah, because you got kestrels.
Oh, I think he thought it was a juvenile coop.
Cooper's hawk.
Yeah.
Which would be in a different group, the occipiter.
Yeah, an occipiter, but it was perched. It wasn't flying.
Uh-huh.
And that would have had the pale eye. Realized once we zoomed in on it, well, that thing's got brown eyes. That's a merlin. And then you could see it. Why we have the photo documentation now.
Right.
You see something that you expect to see, and you kind of make what you're seeing fit what you expect rather than what it really is.
But that's part of the fun of doing these counts.
Since I think they're actually on the list, we had a grackle, common grackle here 2 days ago. I haven't seen it since. But it sat out on the little platform feeder out there and fed for a while.
Yeah.
And it's been several years since we've logged one of those, and at least in this part of the Christmas count.
I have a grackle. I've got a couple of rusty blackbirds.
Oh, that's a good
mixed
one.
In with a few red-winged blackbirds that are coming to the feeder station. You know, they're going to do what they want, of course, but it would really be kind of fun to be able to list those this year.
Oh, if you could get all three in a red wing, a grackle, and a rusty...
yeah.
All at one feeder, you might just have to sit in your window and drink coffee all day instead of go on the road.
Instead of driving the routes and walking the trails.
Because that's one of those things where if you blink at the wrong time, you probably missed.
Right.
You know, or went to pour yourself another cup.
Besides the fact that it's a good way to spend some time in the outdoors, enjoying the habitat, enjoying the critters, I could call this the first citizen scientist research projects. What's the value of a Christmas count, of a winter bird count, Steve?
From a personal standpoint, the value is just what you said. It's a way to spend some quality time outdoors enjoying one of the most delightful parts of our natural heritage, which is birds. From a science standpoint, any individual single count is interesting, but it's not science. It's a snapshot of conditions one day that might not even be the same the next day.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have 100 years of that data, all from the same places, then you begin to see trends.
Mm-hmm.
No, we may not see bluebirds this winter, though we have seen winter bluebirds mm-hmm. every count for the last 4 or 5 years. Robins, those sort of things, when we see those birds that normally are gone, when they're still here, that indicates that something is changing. So then we see indicators, or we see northern birds less frequently, like the evening grosbeaks that we haven't seen in any numbers down here for many years. Other northern birds have shifted farther north, gray jays in the north country. We used to have them at every campsite. It was just a part of camping there, was having the jays come to visit.
Yeah, in the Boundary Waters yeah. and such, yeah.
No longer. It's a notable day up north to see gray jays. Now, blue jays that, when I was working up there, were uncommon.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're the common jay. A southern bird that's moved farther north, the gray jays have moved farther up into Canada. So those kind of things, in any one year, one Christmas count even, don't amount to much. But when you start seeing that frequency of occurrence or the number of counts,
the trends, you start seeing trends and patterns.
Yep.
Which could indicate that there's something going on, and you may not know exactly what it is, but you can make inferences.
And we see things like the wintering waterfowl. Ada Hayden, of course, has been marvelous for that. Because by Christmas count, usually smaller water is solid. And waterfowl got to have water.
Mm-hmm.
Without that, they move. So we're seeing and can kind of count on seeing those wintering swans. And we've seen their numbers build from a few to now, by midwinter, you might see 50, 60, 70 or more trumpeter swans. That was like the whole 48 states 50 years ago. And now we're seeing that at one wintering lake in one state. And there are concentrations like that at several places just in Iowa. And now we know we're going to see bald eagles. It's a question of how many mm-hmm. and how many of them are going to be young ones.
Mm-hmm. How many young versus the mature?
You know,
yeah.
It began with an occasional, not every year, but maybe an occasional mature bald eagle that would be seen here. I remember well, I was still a fairly young ranger at McFarland Park on a Christmas count, mid-1970s. I was just turned the corner to start up the hill on Dayton Road there, west of McFarland Park, and a juvenile bald eagle flew over. That was a really notable thing mm-hmm. for that year's count. That was my big bird of that year.
Thanks, Steve. We'll visit again.
You will.
And we're going to go downtown.
We're
doing some quick moves here because we're running a little bit late, Susan. Sorry. How are you this morning?
Okay. I'm great. How are you, Mike?
We're
doing pretty well here.
Well here.
So are you getting in the holiday spirit?
Yes, we are.
We are.
So it seems like a lot of people are getting in the holiday spirit. And just a couple reminders around the holidays. Of course, City Hall and most of the offices will be closed. It's actually the 2 days after Christmas. It's the Monday and Tuesday after the Christmas weekend, which might throw a few people. But that is the 26th and the 27th. So just remember that if you have business at City Hall in December, that those are the dates will be closed. Also, we've actually been getting a lot of inquiries into what people can throw away. Apparently, a lot of people are digging out their old artificial Christmas trees, and none of the lights are working. And so, we certainly encourage you to try to fix those lights. Just check if it's a fuse or something that you can check. But those can go in the garbage. So those strings of lights that you no longer use can go in the garbage. But I will remind listeners again, batteries, 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 check your batteries. Not all batteries can be thrown in the garbage. And propane tanks should not go in the garbage. And the only reason I'm bringing these up is because we're seeing those show up again at Resource Recovery. lithium batteries, rechargeable batteries, cell phone batteries. Just take them through the car line. We will take them at no charge. Propane tanks, do not throw those in the garbage. Take them to the car line at Resource Recovery. They really can be dangerous if they're thrown in the garbage. Those are the kinds of things that can cause small fires, explosions, and they can be dangerous to our workers. So this holiday season, if you're doing a little pre-cleaning, just remember those helpful tips.
Okay, sounds great. Now, let's shift gears. I think you've got our Ames Water and Pollution Control Director, Officer, Supervisor. I can't remember your title, John.
John Dunn, Water and Pollution Control Director. And he actually has some holiday tips as well, because a lot of things happening at this time of the year affect his department.
Sure. Good morning, John.
Hey, good morning. Yeah, as the weather starts to change and the seasons change, there's a couple things that we want to just make sure that folks keep at the top of their mind. One of them, you know, when people get ready to go travel for the holidays, going to go visit family, everyone's trying to be a little more environmentally conscious, and they want to try to maybe turn down the heat in their home. And that's a good thing, but only down to a certain point. We really want to ask folks to try to keep the temperature in their home above 55 degrees. And the reason that we say that is because a lot of your plumbing and your water meter are in basements. They tend to kind of be up against outside walls that are not insulated, and it's going to be colder in that location than it is up in the living space. And if you have a pipe burst inside the wall of your house, that's going to be an unpleasant Christmas surprise to come home to after you've been away for a week visiting family. We've had a couple of instances over the last couple of years where homeowners had a pipe burst and they only had maybe an inch of water in their basement, but then that starts to float a cardboard box. We had this happen twice, and the water's all moving towards the floor drain, and that cardboard box got pulled over and sucked right down on that vent, and the entire basement fills to the ceiling with water. That's not a good situation. So keep the temperature above 55 degrees. If you've got your water meter, say, in a closet or it's under a cabinet, you're going to be gone and turn the temperature down, just pull the doors open, let some circulation get in around there. So that's one of the things that we deal with this probably 10 or 12 times a year. And it's almost always because somebody has left town and turned their temperature down.
I know that in some older style homes, when we were in our youthful years of marriage, we would have to open the cabinets and things to a lot of our plumbing and some of the older houses just because of that. And we actually, and I know it's wasteful, but sometimes we had to let that water drip a little bit more just to keep something flowing through those pipes. Is that still a recommendation?
That does work. If you can keep the temperature up, obviously that's going to be better. But if you're really concerned that the temperatures are going to get cold, yeah, if you leave just a single faucet running with just a small stream of water coming out of it, then you're constantly bringing that 50, 55 degree water from the mains back into the house, and that does help.
Okay. Another thing that we would occasionally do, and I know this can't possibly work for everybody, but sometimes we'd go at the valve where the main was coming in, and if we were going to be gone for over a week, we would just shut the water off to the house itself and go from there, drain things, and prevent that.
Yep, that works too. If you're going to do that, you still think the temperatures might get low, remember there's always that 2 or 3 feet of exposed pipe where right. It comes through the floor to the basement. But you can just head to a hardware store, buy one of those, foam wraps that you can put around it, and that'll probably do the trick for you as well.
Very good. Before we go to our next subject, I've noticed, I don't know if you can answer this, John, maybe I have to talk to the fire department, but I've noticed, especially with the newer hydrants, the newer fire plugs, there's a little white pipe with a dark cover at times. right next to those hydrants. Do you have any idea what those are? Is that a way to locate those hydrants, or what is that?
That's exactly what that is. That's for being able to actually locate the buried water mains. So a lot of older mains, you could just connect right onto them because they were, cast iron. They were a metal main, mm-hmm. and you could transmit an electrical signal through the main. But as more and more plastic pipe goes in, that plastic pipe doesn't conduct electricity. And so when the pipe is buried, a tracer wire gets taped to the top of that pipe. And yeah, those little white boxes that pop up next to hydrants are a place for the locators to connect on there and be able to trace those water mains.
Yeah, okay. I kind of thought about that, but now I've learned for sure that that's what that was. Well, thanks for answering that question. That'll make some of us just sleep better tonight knowing that. The one question I have is, with water mains, the city has breaks now and again, and is winter or is coming out of winter a rougher time or a time when you are really cognizant of that because of frost and heaving and things? What's the story behind that, and how do you guys go about handling that?
It tends to probably be a little worse right at the change of the seasons when the frost is going in and coming back out.
Okay.
Because that's when you tend to get the ground heaving a little bit. So that does tend to be a probably a little worse time of year. But we're continuing to try to improve our understanding of how that water distribution system works. Mm-hmm. Earlier this summer, we put a pretty high-tech monitoring network in there where we're monitoring pressures and pressure transients, pressure waves, if you will, around the city. And it's giving us some more information to understand how when we start and stop pumps at the water plant, how that type of surging of water might impact it. So we're continually trying to figure out how to make those main breaks fewer and farther between.
Is the switching over to those polymers and those kinds of materials for the pipes as opposed to the cast metal, has that helped a little bit because they're able to flex a little more, or don't have enough data maybe yet to notice that?
Well, I think it's reasonable to expect that the plastic life, what you get from the manufacturers is it's got, probably 100-plus-year life in it. You have fewer issues with corrosion, maybe if you're in an area where you've got some corrosive soils that might impact a ductile or a cast iron main. The plastic is going to be more resilient in a setting like that.
Okay. Well, I've got one more question for you for sure. And that's, holiday is the time of year when you're doing a lot of activity in the kitchen. And gosh, you got the frying pans and the deep fryers and all this stuff going on in the kitchen. And folks think, there's a sink over there. I can just maybe dump some of this material down that sink and be done with it. What's the city water situation take on that? What's your recommendation?
Well, what we want folks to be conscious of is the grease and the fat content in what they're putting down the sewer. Because that will tend to, when it gets below ground where it's much cooler, it's 50 degrees, those greases are going to solidify. If it happens inside your home, it can block your sewer service inside the home. But we also see it where it maybe goes down the sanitary sewer for a ways before it solidifies. And then when it starts backing things up, it's backing up into multiple homes or multiple businesses. So we do want all those aspiring top chefs, to not just turn to the garbage disposal as their first option for getting rid of grease in particular.
Yeah.
Like if you've been frying, say, bacon or something that will solidify at room temperature, then just take a paper towel and wipe that out of the pan and put it in the trash can before you put the pan in the dishwasher. If you've got, liquid oils, frying oils, larger quantities, like if you fried a turkey, the resource recovery plant will take that material for you. So 5 gallons they'll take for free, and then I think it's just maybe a quarter a gallon or something like that for larger quantities.
Mm-hmm.
But the smaller quantities, just individual meal quantities, we would suggest that you pour that into a coffee can, like a plastic, butter or margarine tub, and let it solidify, and then just put it in the trash. Yeah. We do ask folks to not put it into a glass jar and throw it away, because we also want to try to keep the glass out of the trash as well. But something like an old disposable coffee cup or something like that.
Sure. Yeah. And of course, I suppose the thinking with the glass is, well, it's hot. Well, just let the material start to cool enough so that those other containers will handle that. So, John, we're going to wrap up here. Is there any last minute things we need to think about when it comes to water?
Oh, I just want folks to maybe over the holidays, just for a second, give a thought to the staff that's here at the plant, because we're here 24/7, 365. And those are folks who are giving up a little bit of holiday time with their own families to make sure that we've got drinking water service, wastewater service, and they're proud of what they do. And I just want to give them a little acknowledgement. So if folks can just give up, a 1 second thought of thanks for those folks, that'd be very much appreciated for everything that they do.
Definitely, because we take water, we take electricity, all those things for granted. And this time of year in particular, and you think about what's happening around the world and people who don't have power at this time of year, you guys, kudos to all of you. I'll say it right now so that we don't have to, you don't get those silent things coming across around Christmas. You just heard it here on KHOI. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate the time to talk.
Okay, thanks, John. That's John Dunn, the director of the Ames Water and Pollution Control.
Thank you, John Dunn.
Anna, we'll go to Anna Banana now.
This is Anna Banana, your special correspondent for Local Talk's Heart to Heart message. And today I have with me Ella Gifford, who's going to talk about life and what it's like being a teenager who's getting ready to plan her 16th birthday party. Now, for you listeners, I hate events. I don't like doing anything. I don't even like wrapping presents. I brought my friend Jeannie her birthday present, and it was wrapped quite horribly. So I'm not a great event person, but I am very impressed with Ella's planning for her sweet 16th birthday party. So Ella, before you talk about that, would you mind introducing yourself to our listeners?
Yeah, sure. I'm Ella Gifford. I turned 16 in February, but and I'm from Cleveland, Ohio.
And so what brings you joy in your days? What makes you happy?
Well, for starters, I really like hanging out with my friends and family, especially at school. And along with that, I also really like doing musical theater, singing, dancing, just kind of all the arts and stuff, since I've grown up doing that.
Well, speaking of growing up, so I remember when Ella was born. So I get a call from her mom that she's going to go into labor. I'm like, what are you doing, Jeannie? So while she's getting ready to go into labor, Jeannie is like emailing. She's got her laptop on and she's going on with her day, which was quite impressive. And I remember in February, it was a huge snowstorm. So you got a lot going on to bring you into the world. So what do you remember about your birthday?
On my actual birthday, not a ton, but, I just know my mom said it was the biggest snowstorm of 2007 and she calls me a force to be reckoned with. So yeah.
I love that. Well, you are a force to be reckoned with. So I've been able to get to know you over the years through Facebook. Thank goodness for Facebook. I've seen your performances and just been so impressed with your musical talent, your voice, and all the things that you've been interested in. So why do you think that you're interested in the theater and music and art? Where do you think that comes from?
I mean, I think part of it is the fact that my mom worked at arts organizations for the first 14 years of my life. And like I said, I started the arts at like a very young age. I started dancing when I was 3 or 4, and then I started getting into theater when I was 8. And theater, for some reason, just like clicked so much. I remember the first production that I did was Willy Wonka. And I remember when my mom still worked at the place where I was doing this production, I just saw all these kids like just having so much fun and laughing with each other, and they were such good friends. And I was like, "Mom, this is what I want to do." And since then, I've kept doing it. I'm in a production right now at my school, and so it's just been something that I found a lot of joy in, and I've made a lot of connections with, and a lot of this have lasted for a ton of years.
So what is it like being on stage? Do you get stage fright at all? Or what is it like to get up there and do your thing?
I mean, like, obviously with doing a lot of productions over the past few years, it's gotten easier and I've just become more natural on stage. But I can't deny that I do feel a little, like, nervous before, like, opening night or before every performance. Or if I have, like, a solo or I have, like, a big dance number or something, then I do get a little nervous and I'm going to mess up the choreography or the music. And that does happen sometimes, but it just is all about the recovery and just making the rest of the show great.
Ooh, that's like a life lesson, too, being able to recover from mistakes and just embracing it, right?
Yeah.
So tell me, besides what's coming up, what's been a favorite or memorable birthday that you've celebrated?
I think one of my favorites has been, like, my 13th birthday. That was right before COVID hit, but it was a surprise birthday party, which I've hardly ever had one of those. But my mom, or my dad, actually, said we're going to go ice skating to, like, a daddy-daughter ice skating thing. And we got to the rink, and it's funny because I actually saw one of my friend's cars pulling in, and I was like, oh, maybe they're just here so that I can, like, I don't know, maybe they're just, like, here for the same thing. And then I go in, and I turn into, like, this party room thing, and all my friends and family are there, and I'm shocked, and it was really fun. So I got to see a ton of my friends, and, yeah, it was probably, yeah.
A favorite one. So this is your 13th birthday pre-COVID. And so tell us about how, so 14 and 15 are COVID years. And so what did you do during COVID that helped you survive being isolated from your friends, I'm guessing? So what kind of coping mechanisms did you employ to be able to survive?
FaceTime and Zoom were definitely two of the biggest, like, platforms me and my friends used to still stay connected. I remembered we would, like, try and set up, like, Friday night Zooms where we would, like, play games and everything with each other online, and we would, like, FaceTime with each other, and that was just kind of like a daily thing. And when COVID kind of, like, started easing up and we could, like, see each other, like, with masks and outdoors, we started doing that more. It was just more of kind of trying to stay connected even when we couldn't.
Well, these are important years at 14 and 15. So do you think that COVID has impacted you in what kind of ways?
I definitely think it's impacted me, especially as far as, like socially. I feel like 14 and 15 are kind of like the point where you start to, like, make some of your own decisions. And growing up with COVID, that just kind of put a damper on things, especially with having, like, some of my middle school years taken off. I remember I transferred schools at the beginning of eighth grade, so when I went there, I got some friends when I first started there, but I didn't really, like, start growing those connections until COVID started easing up. Mm. So, yeah, it just kind of socially.
But I think you've been really resilient, so you've been able to find ways to be able to connect to your community and friends. But then for those out there who might be our younger listeners who are, like, struggling with either mental health issues or feeling disconnected, what would you have to say to those that are listening that are really struggling?
I would honestly just say find something that you love to do and just kind of immerse yourself in that and find a way to make that, like, something you can work into your everyday life that'll help you through if you're struggling, then help you through with that. And also find people that you really trust that you can talk to, whether that's a teacher, a parent or guardian, a friend, a sibling, anything like that. Just find someone that you really connect with and just make sure that you feel comfortable talking with them, that you can help maybe solve some of the stuff you're struggling with.
Ooh, that's really good advice. And so as you think about tell us a little bit about your 16th birthday party, what you've planned and what you're hoping for this birthday party.
I mean, I'm just hoping for, like, something kind of like my 13th birthday, where it's just, like, everyone's there, all my friends from theater, school, outside of school, just all these different places that I could just have in one place and just have a, like, really big, fun party where there's a lot of dancing. And, I'm just hoping it'll be just, like, this crazy party that I can hopefully remember for a few years, so.
Well, Eric Blocker, if you're listening, so I know you have your music show, I think that you would be very impressed with Ella's music list. So you might want to have her come on your show and do a little DJing with you. So can you tell us a little bit about what music that you've picked on your playlist and why?
It's like, okay, my music taste is kind of all over the place, so that playlist really reflects it. It's songs from 2015 that I grew up with. It's songs that maybe are, like, old-time rock and roll songs that my family and I like to jam out to sometimes. It's anywhere from old rock hits to new pop music. So it's just ones that I feel like I either like remember the lyrics to really well, I connect with the songs, or just they're ones that I know that I can sing along with my friends to.
So you listened to that, Eric, so you'll have to have Ella come on. She's awesome. So as you're thinking about your 16th birthday, this is a time when a milestone birthday, because you'll be able to drive and you'll be able to, everyone thinks about their sweet 16 kind of thing. So what do you hope for the year ahead?
I just really hope that I can start, you know, I'm going to be graduating in a couple years. So I just really hope I can start figuring out like what I want to pursue, what my passion's going to be. Obviously, you know, theater is something that I'm passionate about. And I do want to keep doing that throughout high school and college, maybe not as a career, but as a hobby. But I'm also just going to try and think about like, you know, where I want to go to college and like what I want to do, what I want to major in. And yeah, it's just about making those kind of decisions that'll help me like get on the clear path or the right path or whatever path that might be.
Oh, that's really good. So for those, again, out there who are just struggling with, you know, at 16, I think that, again, you're thinking about college visits, you're wearing the SCAD sweatshirt right now, and you did a visit, and thinking about maybe the University of Iowa, or Iowa State University in Iowa, or OU in Ohio. So what advice do you have for those that, as they're getting ready to think about what's next, another milestone birthday being 18, about how enjoying the moment now, but thinking ahead?
I mean, one of the things that, like, I've done is I made actually two bucket lists. So the one is a high school bucket list, and the other's just kind of a life bucket list. And that's just kind of, like, you know, stuff that I want to do before I obviously graduate, and then stuff that I want to do before my life ends. And I just want to, like, try and accomplish all those and just try to make the best of every moment while also trying to pursue something that's going to help me in the future, make a career, and, you know, hopefully just get me to where I want to be in life.
Ooh, that is big. I mean, I think that's not just for those who are about to turn 16, but for all of you out there as you're thinking about your day as we start off, like, what is that bucket list of things that we want to do now? And what do we want to do 2 years, 5 years from now? So that's great. So Ella, you are a light in this world. I'm so happy that you're part of this world and making a difference in just all the ways that you contribute. So what is your final heart-to-heart messages for our KHOI listeners?
I would just say keep doing what you love, keep having those connections with the people that you love, and just keep trying to make the best of every moment and make sure that you're happy.
Oh, that's the perfect way to end this heart-to-heart message. So this is Anna Banana, your local talk special correspondent with a message that will make you think or feel or just feel loved in this world. So back to you, local talk team.
Thank you, Anna. The Osher Lifelong Learning Institute at Iowa State University is having an online via the Zoom learn about the winter classes scheduled for this Thursday, the 8th of December, 2022. It begins at 1:30. The Zoom window actually opens at 1:15, and you simply go to the isualum.org website. You click on the online Zoom on December tab to join into that. I want to thank co-host Pat Schlerbaum and station manager Mike Murphy for engineering this morning's local talk, and a tug of the KHOI toque to producer Lynn Carey for assistance with this morning's programming. We heard from Dr. Molly Lee with the Story County Department of Public Health. Naturally speaking, Steve Lekwa. You also heard from Susan Guiasta, Public Information Officer, and John Dunn, the Director of the Water and Pollution Control, both of the City of Ames. You also heard from our Anna Banana. You can also hear this online at khoifm.org.
Stay tuned for all things at piano at 9 a.m. and immediately following Democracy Now! Our theme song, as always, is backtracked by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting KHOI. And we'll
see you again on the radio. Thank you.
is KHOI, Story City, Ames. My name is Susan Franzen, and I support KHOI because it's really the heart of Iowa.